SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. We'll call it. It's hour. That's sort of hour three. We've kind of went freeform today, and we bring in Steve Askin, and you know Tony, Steve, as you come in, I don't know if you heard Tony, but he invoked a name that hadn't heard in forever, Gene Navarro.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yep. It's a lot of names. Denise Boudreau is another one.
How about that yesterday? Did you happen to listen at all yesterday?
I didn't. I just heard you talking to Tony about it. I can only listen when my computer decides to listen.
when it's in the mood.
Sometimes it just doesn't come on. I just wait and wait and that's. I do have a new computer. I guess I should start using it. Actually an old new computer that the Blood Horse sent me, but I'm trying to get as much. I'm squeezing the lemon dry, as Horatio Laura would say on this one.
No, I get you. I know what that we've all done that.
Well, I hate to change it because I have all my documents on here.
Yeah.
So until I get them put on a on a separate drive, I want to keep using this one. There's too much. All my photographs, so everything has got to be put on an external drive.
Yeah, there were a few things that from yesterday that you would have really enjoyed, when you get a chance on the archive, Hammy Smith's brother Frank Gorey Smith joined me, and what had motivated it was the fact that yesterday was the date, October 10th. 1974, Denise Boudreau versus Mike LaPonce in the contest of the sexes at Lincoln Downs. And it occurred to me, to really say something about, to do something to honor Denise Boudreau, who died young at 57, and who, for whatever reason, hasn't received, and Smith agreed completely, that when the talk about pioneering female riders comes up, for whatever reason, she does not get included the way she should.
I know a lot of these jockeys, especially the ones from New England. There's been a lot of pioneers that came up through from New England. Back in those days, when I was the librarian, I was in charge of all the photographs. So all these names you mentioned, Denise Boudreau and Michael LaPonce, and I mean, I can envision them. I know their faces because from filing their photographs and delivering the photographs out to editorial. I mean, I still have such, when I see them now, it just freaks me out because I have such vivid memories of this, 18-year-old Wesley Ward with braces in his mouth. and I see him now. I said, wait a second, how did he go from that? That's not the Wesley Ward that I remember. But I so vividly remember Denise Boudreau. I remember Julie Crone when she first came up, when she was, she looks pretty much
she looks the same.
But I remember all these jockeys and trainers that you don't hear their names much anymore. But I just remember their faces. They're so vivid in my mind.
It was fun, and Frank invoked all kinds of names from South Carolina racing history and training history in particular. And then Tony today, I mean, when he mentions, it's funny because that he mentions Gene Navarro, who had his best horse come along and had the unfortunate timing in 1990 to have a tremendous three-year-old filly. And, of course, it wasn't a great year to have a tremendous three-year-old filly when Gopher Wand was was on the scene. But Sharon won a bunch of big
rides. I remember her very well.
She won the coaching club, which I was at, and I remember. But she won a bunch of whatever Gopher Juan didn't win, she won.
Exactly. Oh yeah, no, I remember her. I remember her very well. You know, it's like when Susan's Girl was a big three. When everything she didn't win, Summer Guest won. Anything that Dearly Precious didn't win, Optimistic Gal won. I mean, you have a lot of years like that where you have two sensational fillies. Optimistic Gal was a filly that would win. You go look at her stakes victory. She won all of her races in double digits. She won one stake race. I think it was the Alcibiades. I think she won by 21 lengths. She won another by 15 lengths, 16 lengths. She was unbelievable. But whenever she ran against Dearly Precious, she got beat. She could not beat Dearly Precious. So that it's actually a good topic for a story, you know, someday about these crops where you get two fillies, and just one is just a notch below the other, although great in their own mind, in their own way, I should say.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Hey, listen, the Ferdinand Aladar was the same old thing. You know, if anybody who watched Aladar win the Bluegrass Stakes, especially win the Whitney by 10 lengths, beating J.O. Tobin and older horses in 147, and watched his incredible victory, say, how in the world could the firm beat him every race? I mean, it just boggled the mind, because Aladar was as great a horse as you can imagine when he was not facing a firm.
Yep. Yeah.
Speaking of Aladar, I will tomorrow I leave for Kentucky for our
you're doing the trip
festival and the Legacy tours, and we've got two, and it's very rare because they don't allow tours. But we have actually Leonard Lusky managed to get two tours to Calumet on Sunday, so I will be leading that and. Visiting the graveyard, which is hallowed ground. I mean, if anybody who has not been there, if there's any way in the world of getting in to see that, you know, you walk in there and just the gardens are so incredible, and the big statue of Bull Lee, and then you see all the great males and female. I mean, you start seeing these gravestones of Citation and Whirlaway and Tim Tam, and just one after another. And then Aladar's in a separate place, and Our Mims usually has some kind of wreath around it. You know, there's a lot of Our Mims fans. Aladar's got a beautiful spot. So I'm looking forward to leading both of those tours. And we also have a privilege Saturday of, going to Claiborne, but visiting Marchmont, which is normally off limits to all tours. You know, you can go, people can come in and take their tours and see the graveyard behind the office with all the great horses, but the Marchmont Cemetery is much bigger than that, and the horses there are incredible. All the broodmares are back there, including the horse that I'm looking forward to seeing more than anyone, the horse, my all-time favorite that got me into horse racing, is buried back there, Damascus. Actually, Easy Goer is back there. Sir Ivor, Ak-Ak, Tom Rolfe.
Get me a picture.
I mean, all the great broodmares. So I'm really looking forward to going to the back of the farm, because that's also where they have all the pensioners. They keep them back in that section, but it's Claiborne is like 5,000 acres or so. So it's far, far away. That's why they don't let people back there.
Well,
so it should be interesting. It should be an interesting trip.
Take a picture of General Duke's grave for me. That's
yeah. I think General Duke is in the main cemetery. Yeah, one of the ones that we'll never know.
Yep,
how good it could have been.
Exactly.
Talk about a big crop of horses.
It's the greatest ever. 57.
Yeah, can you imagine if he had stayed healthy? between Bold Ruler and Round Table and Gallant Man, Maya Leash,
Clem and Barbizon too.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable crowd.
The best ever, 1957.
People forget, by the way, people forget one of the great races of all time, the great fields of all time. People don't realize that if we look for a trivia question, that after the Derby, Round Table, Gallant Man, and Bold Ruler faced off, met at the end of the year.
Trenton?
And people will not remember that. At Garden State Park, they ran in the Trenton Handicap.
That's my favorite. We've discussed this. That's my favorite, and I've got my file on the class of 57 is equal to one of your files on a 16th place finisher in any Derby. But it's still the idea was to write a book about the class of 57, and I amassed quite a bit. And
you can have several chapters just on Ralph Lowe's dream.
Yep, absolutely. Well, one of my favorite things that ever happened on this show was asking Nehrud, hearing live on the air. I wish there's a chance we have this tape. The Casey's got a garage full of the old CDs, but I had the privilege of asking Nehrud on the air, what did Shoemaker tell you? And he, do you remember that, Steve? Do you remember hearing him when he,
Well, the thing is, he it was very important what Shoemaker told him.
Exactly.
Shoemaker started making excuses, and Nehrud would have probably clobbered him.
Yep, that's what he said.
But when he admitted that he made a mistake, Nehrud just dropped it, and that was it.
Yep.
Nehrud also has other thoughts about that, which he's never made public, which he took to the grave with him.
Well, he didn't exactly take it to the grave because you've heard them.
I've heard them, yeah. I've heard them, but I won't repeat them. He had some theories about that. But.
Well, there's plenty. Listen, there's been no it's no news that there's no shortage of conspiracy theories involved with General Duke scratching on Friday, and the fact that that Calumet still wins the next day. I mean, it that's what makes that's just one more chapter in the most amazing. Bold Ruler and Round Table being born the same night. I mean,
that's incredible too.
There's 20 movies to be made about that group. I mean, even before you get to the Triple Crown season, Bold Ruler and General Duke banging heads in Florida that winter.
Oh sure, definitely, yeah. The thing is, General Duke, that's when he started. I think one of the races that General Duke won, I don't know if it was the Flamingo or the Florida Derby, he went like 146-4, like set a track record.
Yes.
And that's when he established himself as, wow, this horse is really developing into something extremely special. But, there's conspiracy theories, including the one that I'm sort of vaguely alluding to. But yeah, if somebody wrote a tell-all book on that crop, it would be very interesting. Another thing people don't realize, by the way, is to show you how much racing has changed. Is that Bold Ruler runs in the Kentucky Derby, and then he wins. Then he wins the Preakness 2 weeks later. What a lot of people don't realize is that the Saturday in between, Bold Ruler won the Preakness Prep. Pimlico had a race the week before the Preakness called the Preakness Prep. It was like a mile and a 16th or a mile and an 8th race. And Bold Ruler ran it after running into the first Derby. Even though everybody talks about it's only 2 weeks to the Preakness. So Bold Ruler ran in between the 2 weeks.
It shows
you the thought process back then.
Yeah.
This is an era, by the way, where Calumet Farm all their Derby winners ran in the Derby trial 4 days before the Kentucky Derby and worked on that Thursday. They all, I mean, you go back, Citation, Whirlaway, Ponder, you look, go back to all their big horses. They all ran in the Derby trial, came back 2 days later, worked a half a mile, and then won the Kentucky Derby 2 days after that. So it was a lot. It was a lot of interesting training philosophies back then that we don't see now.
You know, Steve, I pulled up old rulers. I pulled up his chart to see how it was termed. It's just listed as an allowance, and in fact, it says special event between seventh and eighth races, no wagering. And here's a track note.
Yeah,
you know,
had, what, three horses in there or something?
It had three horses. Inswept and Convoy were the other two horses, and the comment is no difficulty. He won by a length, Bold Ruler, but I don't think I've ever seen that. No difficulty. Mile and a 16th.
I know. I think one of my favorite comments in the past performances, I can't remember which race it was, but it was Nashua. You have the champions in front of you?
Yeah.
Look under Nashua's past performances. He won a race, and it was in Florida. It was in like the Widener or the Gulfstream Park Handicap. It was off a long layoff, and he won by like a neck. And I think the comment was like eased up or something like that. But if you got that, take a look at that. There was
easing up late.
Easing up. Where did he win by a neck?
He won by, oh no, that's a different one. That's actually a different, that was the Dwyer win, easing up late. you know what? Nashua has got some very funny comments, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Scored in his second, well, the juvenile, his second career start, scored under Clever Ride. Third win, or actually third start, he lost to Royal Note in the Cherry Hill, unruly all the way.
All the way.
When he won a not a maiden special weight, but just a special weight at Belmont in October, Clever Score, held on gamely, sensational score in the Wood Memorial, good bid, no excuse in the Kentucky Derby. How about that? The good bid, no excuse. And if ever a horse, yeah, that's why I always say it about the Breeders' Cup Mile. If Rock of Gibraltar didn't win, you know, nobody's the same thing about Nashua in the Derby. If he didn't win, anybody can lose. Native Dancer too.
It was a different game back then.
Well, as usual, we found a fun, crazy diversion. Let me get a couple of things to get us pointed into the modern era.
Yeah, there was another one, too, by the way, which I think was one of my favorite comments. And I think it was when he won the Belmont Stakes. And I can't remember the comment, but it was really bizarre.
Nashua?
Yeah.
All right, hold on. I'll go back. I'll go back. Here we go. A romp.
Yeah, what do you want, by like 7 or 8 lengths or something, right?
A romp. That's all. But
how about that for a comment? Yeah. I love it.
Romped. Speaking of a romp, we had a bit of a rumpus with Lenny Shulman earlier, Steve, as we announced his deal to write the Justify story.
Yes, I've been hearing all the details about that. I'll say one thing: he's talking to an awful lot of people, and. You know, I've given him some interesting people to speak to, and And, you know, this is taking a little, you know, a lot of materials, getting a lot of stuff from my Baffert autobiography. But he's really digging in. And like I told him, you know, the three horse biographies that I wrote, you know, one was on Dr. Fager, and the other two were on John Henry and Kelso. And it's, I would justify, it's even more so, you know, because of his few starts. But it's more fun to write a book about a horse that didn't race that much than it is like John Henry and Kelso, because you've got to cover so many races.
That's a good point.
And you get bogged down in all these races, but you got, you know, you got to mention them. But I like all the behind-the-scenes stuff, which I was able to do with Dr. Fager, you know, because he only had a little over 20 starts. And I was able to really concentrate on his maiden race and races that people don't know. But a horse like Justify, I mean, you can really get into workouts and really get into every single person that had their hands on him, that had interesting things to say about him when he was a baby, and all the stuff in between races. That stuff is even more fascinating than, you know, having to go through a horse's career, you know, who had raced 70 or 80 times, and you've got to get all those. You know, you got to cover a lot of those. You got to skip over a lot too, but there's still a lot. But you can really get into the meat of it.
There's so many personalities.
Just to go back, I was trying to peak my memory of the race I was thinking about with Nashua. So I just picked up a copy of my copy of Champions. It was the Wood Memorial. He won by a neck. And the comment was, sensational score. Well, by a neck. I just love that, sensational score. I don't know what it means when you win by a neck, but that was the comment I was thinking about when he won the race, when he won by a neck. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that in.
I love it. Excited for Lenny to have this opportunity. And
he'll do it. It's going to be a great book. He's going to... And, you know, listen, he persevered. He finally found somebody who was interested in it. And, you know, the one thing about Lenny is, you know, you look at all the features that he writes for Blood Horse, and he's constantly interviewing people. Yeah, he does more transcribing than anybody I've ever seen. And that's the one thing about this book. And his deadline is December 1st.
Right.
So, he's got to work his tail off to finish a book, but you know, he got a lot of it started already. You know, if you read any of Lenny's other books, you know, the book he wrote on the jockeys, and then his two novels were both, I thought, both really, really good. So you know, this is going to be a very, very good book. And I know, and Baffert gave him Baffert and Jill, you know, they gave him an awful lot of behind the scenes stuff. And that's the kind of stuff that people like. All the behind-the-scenes stuff, not just, he went out there and he won this race, and then he came back and won that race. And like I said, when you have a horse with so few starts, you're able to really dig deep and get precise moments in between races and background material that you normally wouldn't get. So, it's going to be great. Although I kidded him because in the title it was something like 111 days of glory or something like that.
Yeah,
and it was 111 days
to glory.
Yeah, it's something like that. But there's a difference. You know, a lot of times if you read about that, you'll see meant references of 111 days and 112 days. And one of them is the amount of day from one day to another. And then the other is how many days in between the two races. And sometimes you see them both confused. So actually from the day he broke his maiden to the day he won the Belmont Stakes, actually it was 112 days. So I kid him, but he said 111 days sounded better.
It, yeah. The 111. It's got a nice.
That'll be great. I look forward to reading that.
As opposed to the famous unauthorized autobiography, the Baffert's.
The thing is, it's funny. Lenny read that whole book because he's got all of Baffert's background when he was a kid, and there's the match races and all these skullduggery and the Baffert family escapades. You know, he took a lot of that out of that book, but. Yeah, when you come to think of it, by the way, I wrote that book in 1999. You think a lot has happened in Baffert's life since 1999?
Just a little.
I said, 1996, nobody knew who Bob Baffert was. Now you want to write his autobiography in 1999? I know he became famous fast. I said, but let the guy have a career, you know, before you do a... No, you know, they wanted to capitalize on it right away. And, I never forget calling Bob up and telling him I want to do this. And I said, look, I'm coming down to Kentucky. I'll be down there 2 weeks before the Derby. I know Derby week, forget about. I said, but the week before that, nobody's down there. I said, we'll get together. You know, I figured, you know, I'll go to his hotel room, sit down, I'll put the tape recorder on, go through his whole life. You know, I come down there, you know, Monday goes by, Tuesday goes by, Wednesday goes by. You know, finally the week is ending. And I said, you know, Bob, when do you want to do this? He said, all right. He said, I'll tell you what, he's come in the barn. I wound up sitting on a tack box with him in the shed with the blacksmith and the veterinarians coming in every 2 minutes trying to get stuff down there with all the noise and the shed row and everything, sitting on a tack box. It's not exactly how I envisioned it. And I only got like a fraction of what I needed to get. I mean, I didn't cover all this. A lot of his background and all the great stories of him growing up as a kid. I wanted to get all that stuff, and I said, I don't know how I'm going to do this because now, you know, I went through the Triple Crown, and then finally, come Preakness time, the book was due in June, and this is now Preakness, mid-May, and I hadn't spoken to him yet at length for his book, and I keep telling him, I said, Bob, I said, it's your life, I said, I have to write something one way. If you want me to make it up, I'll make it up. So that's when I told Ray Pollock. I said, look, I said, you know, I can only do so much. I said, but I just want to prepare you that this is going to be the in the history of literature the first ever unauthorized autobiography in the history of literature. Finally called up Bob, and then Bob. So he arranged for me to speak to him on the phone. So I had to hook up my tape recorder to the phone. So I'm on the phone with him for like a few hours. You know what it's like, by the way? The entire thing, I couldn't wait for it to end because I'm saying, what if I hang up, by the way, and I put the tape recorder on and there's nothing on there? You know, what if the tape wasn't working? You know, I was like a nervous wreck doing it over the phone when you can't check and to see if you're getting anything. Yeah, anything can go wrong with a tape recorder, you know, with a phone connection. So by the time the thing ended and I was able to play it back and then, you know, and then having to transcribe everything. So, it turned out okay for what it is, you know, an autobiography of the first three of his 23 years as a trainer.
Now there's quite a bit more. I guess it is time for an update to that story. Steve, a quick
for sure.
Slightly.
You know, he was going through a personal thing in his life, you know, having just met Jill, and I said, yeah, how do you want me to handle this? I mean, you know, what do you want me to do with it, you know, about this? So So Jill is not in the book. I don't think she's forgiven him since.
Yeah, there'll be another one, and you're the guy to update it. Steve, before we go, we got to get a quick response from you on the two-year-olds. We promised a two-year-old review. What did you take away from the big upset in the Futurity and the really good performance by Complexity in the Champagne?
Oh, I think the horse who won the Futurity was an absolute lock. How could you not have him?
Yeah.
He just looked like he couldn't... The thing I loved about it, by the way, is that he really wasn't a true 70-1 shot. It's not like a horse that had run so horribly, and you say, where did that come from? There were so many question marks about that horse, you really didn't know what kind of a horse he was. I mean, we didn't,
sure.
You know, you couldn't tell, you know, from the races he had run in, you know, if this horse, you know, coming off the Arlington Futurity on the synthetic. I mean, he broke his maiden first time out at Ellis Park. You know, and even his race in the Sanford, you know, when he got beat, yeah, I mean, it wasn't a bad race. But the one thing that nobody mentioned on the whole telecast, which I found fascinating about the horse, is the fact that he's by Painter. I mean, how many times, one of the great all-time stories himself, and nobody really played up on the fact that this horse is by Painter. So, I mean, listen, he was eligible to improve. I think a big part of it is that there were so many horses in the race, you know, like 13 horses, and he just, you know, fell through the cracks. But if you watch the race, from a visual standpoint, he looked awfully good in the stretch, the way he was drawn off in that race. I mean, if you look at his stride, he was striding out beautifully in the stretch. He's a powerful running horse. I mean, there's no sure thing that this was some kind of fluke. And the thing is, the horse that ran second, because I remember when I was at Saratoga this year, you know, I would see Kenny McPeak outside of, Avian Rota's, you know, back porch, because that's where he'd watch the training from. And he kept telling me about this first-time starter he had that he hadn't run, named Signal Man. I said, this horse can really run. He said that, but, you know, he's not fashionably bred at all. He's by General Quarters. So he's not well bred at all. But he said, this horse is amazing. He said, this horse is a real runner. Take my word for it. And then that Sunday, we went to the track, and he broke his maiden by a nose. You know, it was a good race, nothing exceptional. But he comes back here, you know, and he runs second in a grade one. So, you know, listen, how good these horses, I don't know. But, I mean, from a visual standpoint, I couldn't knock this horse. Now, complexity is a different story because Chad Brown is extremely, extremely high on this horse. He thinks he could be some kind of super freak type horse. Question with him is how far he wants to go. You know, we really don't know that much about the McLean's Musics and how far they want to go. And his broodmare sire is, yes, it's true, which is speed. So he's not exactly you know, your typical Derby horse right now. But again, it's another horse that goes wide one. But you know, when you can go 22-2, 45-1, you know, and keep going, I thought he looked really good in there. But I tell you, if you're looking for a Derby horse to come out of there, I tell you, Chuck McGahey's horse that ran second, he ran a tremendous race. Not only did he stumble badly at the start, but if you watch the head on, he actually stumbles twice coming out of the gate. He stumbles and then goes down again on top of the first stumble. And then he gets shuffled back to last and makes a big move and actually made up a couple of lengths, came home in 24-4, made up a couple of lengths on complexity in the stretch and finished well clear of the third horse. And I'm also not going to throw out the fourth place finisher, Aurelius Maximus, who was very impressive breaking his maiden. But, you know, listen, this is a horse that's been on the lead and looked like he's got good speed, and he was last after a half a mile. And it was absolutely nowhere. He was way behind, turning for home. He looked like he had no shot of finishing in the money, and he only got beat in nose for third in the race. And he was coming at the end. So the two horses, the two Derby horses, to watch out for. Now, complexity could easily come back and win the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, but again, I'm not sure pedigree wise whether he's a Derby horse, and you want to see him come off the pace and not have to run 22-2, 45-1. But if you're looking for Derby horses seen this weekend, Code of Honor and Aurelius Maximus are the two horses. The one disappointment in the race, who I thought would run better, was Endorsed. So even though he only broke his maiden by a neck, he was extremely impressive. And I know Karen McLaughlin was expecting big things from him. You know, maybe he just didn't like being down on the inside, breaking from the rail. but he just sort of ran, ran kind of an even race. You know, actually got tired at the end, but he really didn't show much. So, but I certainly would give him another shot. Maybe he likes running on the outside better, which is how he broke his maiden. But all in all, I think it was, the two races were very impressive. I get some good horses come out of there.
Yeah, very much. And, of course, the full effect of the stake rundown leading into the Cup. We're getting close, and we can start to get organized, Steve. And really, once we get through this weekend, everything will turn quite much up on the Breeders' Cup front. And
we're starting
to get excited.
There's really nothing else to see. We'll see what happens
yep.
in the Champions Day, in England. Even though it's only 2 weeks before the Breeders' Cup, a lot of horses still come out of those races. So we're going to see who comes out of there. And, of course, if Enable comes for the turf, she's going to be the star of the day because she is amazing. She really is. And these fillies every year. I mean, now they run 1-2. A Sea of Class ran a tremendous race. But it's just amazing how fillies dominate the arc year after year. I mean, it's just incredible. We never see anything like that in this country.
No, it's odd. It's gotten to be unusual.
The fact that Enable, by the way, I mean, she hadn't even run all year until she comes back in the September Stakes on the,
right.
on the Poly track. The all-weather track, and that's it, going into the arc. She beat a really good horse in it, but it was on an all-weather surface. She didn't even run on the grass the entire year.
And no, it's amazing.
The way she did like that, I mean, boy, I tell you, she is... You look at her arcs, and you look at Trev, and you say, oh, my God, how good are these fillies now? They just dominate.
Yeah. It's
how about Urban
Sea? It's special. How about? Yeah.
Did you I don't know if you saw that the statistic. It's maybe one of the most mind-boggling statistics I've ever heard. Do you know that the mayor Urban Sea?
Mm-hmm.
she is the grandam or great grandam of the first 8 finishers of the arc.
It's amazing. It's incredible.
8 finishes.
Yeah.
She's a grandam or great grandam. This is not like a sire who's got 8,000 horses.
Right.
Basically, it's through Galileo and see the stars. I mean, the dominance of those two. But you realize I bet Urban Sea, by the way, in the only time I ever covered the Canadian International, she ran in the E.P. Taylor. And she finished second. I bet her in the race. I fell in love with her, seeing her on the racetrack, and I bet her. And she ran second in the E.P. Taylor, and then she winds up winning the arc herself. She winds up winning the arc. She doesn't win the E.P. Taylor, but she wins the arc, and then produces two Hall of Fame horses.
I've got one of my favorite photographs that I was lucky to win photograph to be invited into was from with Mrs. Weber for My Typhoon when she won at Saratoga.
Right.
I'm in the Boston Spa picture, and
she loved that filly.
Well, and she she just the expectation. I don't know. Maybe the expectations were too much for. For her to, in terms of a produce, but she's had trouble maintaining pregnancies. I think she's lost a couple of foals, and then the runners have amounted to nothing. It's been very frustrating.
You never can tell. A lot of mares, look at Genuine Risk. How many years? What did she go? 12 years without having a foal, first foal after 12 years or something. Some ridiculous number. I mean, sometimes you see some incredible stories of, mares who are not doing anything and produce something, at the age of 20, 21 years old. after doing nothing. And then you got mares that that really weren't that good on the racetrack, and they produce a stakes horse every year.
Yep.
You look at a mare like Dahlia. I mean, Dahlia, said, oh, she's not going to be, the Dahlia running against the colts her entire life. She ran until she was like seven. She didn't know in the world she's going to be a good brood mare. I wish she had four great group one horses and winners. And then I think two or three group one placed horses. She was a phenomenal broodmare. And yet her arch rival, Ale France, who was so brilliant, daughter of Seabird, she couldn't produce anything.
No, it's a strange. We had this came up earlier today with Larry Rivelli. He told the story of the New York bred that's 3 for 3 that may go to the juvenile turf sprint, and then a sister, a full sister. They're both by Adios Charlie, out of a mare that started once ever, a cal bred that started at Gulfstream and never made it really beyond one start and didn't win. Here she is 10 years later, and she's produced a fabulous Illinois bred filly and a 3 for 3 New York bred colt. I mean, from Adios Charlie as the mate. I mean,
the majority of our greatest horses in America all come from a former $1,500 claimer, Prince Quillo.
And La Troyenne was what, 0 for 8? Was that her?
And La Troyenne, when you see her in the pedigree, that's an automatic.
I think she was 0 for 8 in her career, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, just the decision even to breed some of these. I mean, it's actually remarkable that a mare like the one that we talked about with Larry Rivelli today even gets covered. I mean, it's the kind of the horse you look at and you think, is this horse worth breeding? He explained what happened, how Wesley was putting a band of broodmares together at the time, and then he moved to culled a bunch of them, and Rivelli ended up and Rich Rabin ended up with this one. It's so random. It's amazing.
You never know. I mean, it was a blade of time. Her first four foals. She won the San Anita Derby, then she had the Hopeful winner, then she produced like four stakes winners. Her first three foals ran 100 times, the second foal ran 198 times, and the third foal ran 98 times. And then after that, she had a horse that ran once and then unraced, and then for the next 8 years, she did not produce a foal. Her foal, she either aborted, she had twins die, she had foals die. She could not produce a foal for the next 8 years. And then at the age of 20, she produced Corral of the Dam of Damascus. So you just never know.
Stick to it, everybody.
How's this
bottom line
lesson? How we covered just about everything from the 1967 crop to Damascus Dam to Nashua.
Back and forth and around again. Absolutely. That's what makes it fun. I know. That's what makes it fun, though. That's what we love. And, Steve, we appreciate it, as always.
Okay, Steve, I'll talk to you.
Get ready. Get the Breeders' Cup lists going, and we'll start to talk seriously about Cup in the next 3 weeks. We'll take a break here, and we're at the bottom of hour three, and things have just whistled by today. Forget it. This is one of those days when we get to noon, and Casey and I, Casey will say one of two things. I never left the chair. That's one. I know that it was a fast show. And what else? What's the other one? Feels like we just started. Pretty funny. And of course, once again, we've managed to make trouble here between Quigley and Eng. So we got to figure out what we're going to do with the last 25 minutes, or not even, last 20 minutes. And, we didn't get started today with the normal Hong Kong Jockey Club visit. I've got to make the arrangements. Graham Cunningham is going to be joining us to talk Hong Kong. And maybe we'll start that tomorrow. On a Hong Kong sidebar. Did you see this about Joe Marrero? Marrero went to Japan and he started on a conditional license. You get a temporary license. If you're an outsider, to become a full-time jock in Japan, you've got to pass two tests, a Japanese language test and then a test of written rules and whatnot. And Marrero has not passed them, and they're not going to let him stay past December 1st. So anxious to hear from Graham Cunningham what this is going to mean. They say he can try again next year. But Joe Marrero going to be in trouble here. And apparently only two, I read a story, only two jocks from elsewhere have come successfully to Japan and passed the tests. Mirko DeMauro and Christophe Lemaire. Pretty funny. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Breaking down the biggest stories in the world of horse racing, this is At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
I can't stop shaking. The room has a groove and the floor, it's almost earthquaking. Look what we're making. History out on the floor, and it's just awaking. So get that needle in the core, scratch that back and give me more. You know exactly what I came here for. Back it up and do it again. From the middle to the top, to the end.
We are back at the races, 20 minutes, a little less, to spend with Rich Eng. And we've missed Rich the last couple of weeks. Feel terrible. I'm happy to catch up with him now. Rich, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I told Casey I'm one of those guys sitting in the bullpen. I'm ready for the call anytime you get me on. I'm ready.
Well, we've talked that one of the things I've wanted to try to weave in, we'll talk about this off the air too. Wanted to incorporate more gaming conversation and sports betting stuff that and I for years I've asked you your sports betting opinions too when the time arises, and it really feels opportune. And in fact, our friend Howard Barish, I think we're gonna marry Rich you to gaming today, and Howard's taken over and the publishing of gaming today, and we'll try to try to work a little tie in here and have you track what's going on the gaming front as part of our conversations.
Well, that'd be fantastic. I spoke to Howard soon after the purchase and when he took over, and had a nice conversation with him. And he hired a very good friend of mine from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, Steve Karp, to be the senior editor. So I know some of the key people over there, and I know you, of course. So maybe something good will happen out of this. I'd be happy to participate.
Well, because it's obvious with what's going on, and you're monitoring it, because anybody following you on Twitter, you're incorporating a lot of this fast-moving news that is really, I mean, it is on a daily basis, Rich, what's going on. I mean, whether it's information systems that are being purchased and incorporated and so forth, it's really quite something. I'm trying to keep up on it. It's not easy.
Well, I tell you what, the news that has been the hottest lately, and I'm sure you've seen the headlines, if not read the follow-up articles, but there's been a talent raid from some of the companies here into Vegas, and we've lost some good people. I won't say lost, that's the wrong term, but they have they've kind of hired away some good people to work for big corporations, DraftKings in particular. They hired Johnny Avello, the vice president of racing sports over at Wynn. He's now working for DraftKings. Hired Frank Kunovic, who was over at the Caesars Palace Corporation, and also a good friend of mine, Ed Malinowski, over at Stratosphere. So there's three. The talent pool is getting drained, and credit to DraftKings. They knew who to zero in on and bring some very skilled, talented people onto their roster.
There's speculation that maneuver by DraftKings, and particularly when it comes to Johnny Avello, it is basically a preclusion toward opening a sports book. And the people that were stunned, quote unquote, by Avello's news, they shouldn't have been that stunned, because it's been fully a year, Rich, that, and you and I even discussed it, that Avello had kind of hinted that he was leaving or retiring from Wynn. It wasn't like this was a complete out of the blue, jaw dropper.
Yeah, that's ironic that you mention that, because when I talked to Johnny at one point last year, he had used the R word, and I said, Johnny,
right,
you are way too young. You are way too young to retire. You've got too much to offer still to the industry. And somebody else thought the same way that I felt, that Johnny's got a lot of tread on the tires, that's for sure. So he should do a great job for them. And I think his abilities, on a national basis for DraftKings should be very, very good, very beneficial for that company.
The fallout of John leaving Wynn has been their announcement that they're not going to continue with Derby futures. And Johnny not only did a tremendous job laying out the lines, it was also a publicity machine. I mean, that they would release, you know, every week, and as we get close to the first of the year, you know, on a more regular basis, they would, you know, the on Twitter it would be circulated, you know, the, you know, this week's Derby futures. And so, you know, from a publicity standpoint, there's a bit of a vacuum that if Wynn's going to leave that marketplace, who does it, you know, who's out there as an alternative, basically, for the people that come to Vegas rich and want to get Derby future bets down?
Well, I think the two that come to mind, one would be William Hill, who people have seen growing on a national basis. I know they have a lot of future books as far as the different sports along with horse racing. Westgate Las Vegas would also have a lot of future books, but I think they pretty much got out of the horse racing Kentucky Derby angle. They used to have a good one over there for the Derby, but they haven't had it in the last couple of years. But you're talking about a void that's really huge, because Johnny was considered the preeminent bookmaker as far as, you know, setting odds for futures in the NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, National Hockey League, colleges, sports. I mean, when people came in from out of town and were looking for a future bet, Wynn was the place that they were going to. His abilities, I'm not sure if they can replace that. So not only is the Kentucky Derby future book in gone, but I really question if they're going to be able to continue some of these other sports and future books bets that I talked about, if they're going to be able to offer those, Steve. So it'll be interesting to see moving forward if someone can at least partially fill that void.
What explain to people too, Rich, because one of the arenas that is getting the most, I think the most traction is the information services portion of this equation. And there was news, I think today's what, Thursday, so it would have been on Monday or Tuesday, Scientific Games, who of course we know in our business as a tote provider, Scientific Games bought an operation called Don Best Sports. And Don Best Sports is basically an information service entity. Explain what's going on in this arena, because it feels like there's people scurrying to make these kinds of strategic alliances and to build rosters of I suppose, you know, cooperative interests.
Well, you know, I think to take a look at that question you just asked me, I'm going to take one step back and put the focus on the leagues first, and then we'll answer the question about the data. The thing about the leagues is they're all looking to figure out, you know, I'm talking about the NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, so forth, of how to get a slice of the betting pie. And the first thing that they went after was this ridiculous integrity fee, as if the sports industry, sports book industry, would have to pay the leagues to provide integrity of the outcomes of the events. It's actually the other way around. I mean, the thing with, you know, taking the sports betting here in Nevada is if there's any sort of questionable trend in the betting, we see it here first because of the way the bets are all monitored. There's actually some interaction among the different companies, so they can see if someone's getting hit with a certain type of wager and somebody else is, you know. So that's how those things actually can be seen ahead of time, is if there's some mysterious betting patterns. So that integrity fee angle is pretty much gone by the wayside. So now another angle that the leagues are trying for is the information data, and they're trying to sell the fact that, well, you can't get better data than from the NFL, from the Major League Baseball, from the NBA, if you actually, you know, get the data information for the leagues. Well, the thing is, you know, they missed the boat in the fact that Nevada has had data for these sporting events for, heck, it's going 40, 50 years, and there's a lot of sources for getting that data. And, you know, Don Best is one of them that you just mentioned. So now it's being data-driven, and if you would want to make a comparison between that and horse racing, it would be as if, you know, people were buying up the data companies in horse racing, including like Daily Racing Form, Equibase, Brisnet. You know, these are all data providers for people to use information to bet on, no different than sports. People need data, information to formulate their wagers too.
So, I mean, essentially, from because Don Best doesn't, they don't take bets, but they are sort of I guess akin to scientific games in that they are almost a tote service in themselves, with, you know, kind of an underpinning of sport for sports betting.
Yeah, you know, a company like Don Best or Jim Feist, you know, there's a myriad actually of websites like that. They're not actually bookmakers, but they do have a roster of handicappers, professional handicappers. And the thing about betting on sports, and you know, there's always been the very shady angle of touts, and that actually happens in horse racing too, where you know people try to sell their services and they may not be as honorable as we'd like them to think. But the roster of handicappers that these people have at a Don Best or at Joe Feist or some of these other locations, Vegas Insider, they try to get reputable people who are actually doing the work and are trying to also, you know, have their selections graded so that people can see what their win-loss ROI records and things like that are. So they make money on, you know, selling selections, the packages. And also, you know, the data. If you subscribe to one of these services, then you get the ability to go into their website and glean the information from the different sports. So it's a pretty good full-service package. And obviously, they're doing well. They have been doing well for a long time. And now the opportunity is here to actually explode the business on a national level.
It's amazing, and this is one, Rich. This is exactly what I'm hoping you can help everybody with, keeping tabs and understanding as this sports betting evolution takes place, and that includes what is some seemingly important movement in New Mexico and Ohio now that look like the next marketplaces that are going to open this week. Pennsylvania, I talked with Tony Black earlier, and Parks is going to end up with a parlor. So there is just so much here to comprehend, and I thought it'd be a natural, with your long-standing knowledge and experience in Vegas, and with gaming today, I thought it was a perfect marriage.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, Steve, and I'm always available on call, as I say, after the bullpen. And the thing that is so interesting about this new industry is the fact that it's the federal government left it up to the states, on a state-by-state basis to approve it. And then all of a sudden I start seeing some politicians saying, well, we need federal oversight. And I'm just warning that your listeners out there, I do not think you want federal oversight over something that has been as successful, say, here in Nevada on a state basis that we've had over the last 50 years. So it can be done on a state-by-state basis. You just need to make sure you follow your rules and regulations. And, the thing that, for example, that happened back in New Jersey with FanDuel and that computer glitch with the in-game betting, well, those are the kind of things that need to be regulated ahead of time, because, there are issues that are going to come up, and you've got to do the right thing as far as keeping the integrity of the betting, the integrity of the games intact.
Oh, no doubt. And that was a fast. There's another kind of isolated incident where it's something that I just think the crossover appeal and interest of the horse playing community, it's just a natural, and staying on top of this, I mean, it's enough for us all to monitor our own business and the racing side of things, and so to have a finger on the pulse counts for a lot. And I just, I was so invested in the years leading up to the Supreme Court ruling, Rich. I mean, all the time I spent having Dennis Drazen visit with every turn back and every time they were rebuffed, we kept discussing it. And now this just, constant shifting landscape requires really a kind of a vigilant watch to keep on top. So we're going to incorporate that in with our conversations, and I know Rich will be great for that. And we can't wrap up Rich either. We'll talk about Breeders' Cup obviously in coming weeks, but we invoked you yesterday as we celebrated the Jersey Mafia, Kenny Jordan, with a Friday-Saturday double. Great job by Kenny.
Yeah, I wasn't going to hang up the phone without saying congratulations to Kenny. He listens to the show religiously, and obviously we all know each other. He's a tremendous handicapper, a better person, and I was so thrilled. I spoke to him right after he was able to get the two BCBC entries done over the weekend, and you know, he was too modest. He was way too modest, Steve. We know how great a handicapper he is.
No doubt, and hit two entries in that contest gives him a lot of versatility. I mean, $20,000 worth of armament for Kenny Jordan will go a long way. And Rich, I appreciate it. Follow Rich Eng on Twitter, Rich Eng for Pro Pick. RaceDayLasVegas.com for Rich's Southern California opinions that are there. And I know on Friday on Race Day Las Vegas, Rich gave out a I saw that you were celebrated by listener to Ralph's show. So as always, great work, Rich, and we'll talk next week.
Hey, thank you, Steve. One final note, we're playing at the Fall Classic at the Orleans. If any of your listeners are in town or can get to Vegas today, we've got that 3-day tournament starting this morning.
Outstanding. Thursday, Friday, Saturday at the Orleans. And a lot of big hitters will be there. The Matisses. That's always a big Matisse contest.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I love it. Rich Eng, best of luck over there. And we'll talk to Rich next week. And we'll talk to you tomorrow. I just sent out the note. The word came from New York. All races are off the turf. The rain. This is just insane. I'll thank Lenny Shulman and Larry Ravelli, Tony Black, Steve Askin, Rich Eng, and all of you, and Casey, and we'll do the weekend preview thing tomorrow. Plenty of good racing today. HRRN later, 3 o'clock, right here. Racing-wise, Belmont, Charlestown, Delaware, Evangeline, Finger Lakes, Fresno, Calder, GPW, Hawthorne, Keeneland, Laurel, Penn National, Prairie, Remington. Get at it. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sportsform Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sportsform delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
What career track are you on?
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky, or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.